Good morning and welcome to another edition of the Your Financial Editor program right here on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD and, of course, streaming live worldwide at WFMD.com. I am Chris Murray, your host. Hope you're having a good Saturday morning so far. Off to a good start with the weekend. Good program planned for you today. We're going to be talking about some top stories from the world of finance and also some economic data, what the Federal Reserve might be up to later this year. I think you'll want to hear a little more about that. And also we're going to be talking about risk tolerance and people's risk exposure. A lot of folks seem to be feeling that the market's not very stable, and they're questioning what their status is when it comes to risk. Are they too aggressive, not aggressive enough? Will they be able to handle the next catastrophe or financial meltdown, whatever you want to call it? Also, retirement income. It's nothing nowadays for people to live 25, 30 years plus into retirement. So once they retire, one of their main concerns is outliving their retirement income. And we're going to dive into that subject in detail in just a little bit as well. One of the things I want to say last weekend was the G20 Global Summit. And it was the first main event, if you will, for our new Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin. And he did a stellar job. You had world finance chiefs from around the world. You had ministers of finance, central bankers, etc. And it was a real struggle last weekend when they were trying to find common ground while also remembering their main goal being boosting trade around the globe. But again, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, our new guy, really did a great job fighting off a big effort by rivals in Germany where the G20 was held. And he actually was able to get these finance officials to drop a disavowal of protectionism from a very closely watched policy statement that was issued by the G20 and developing nations. So now, for the new administration, this basically watered down language that emerged from the G20 helps to ensure that the U.S. can still use sanctions or various other policy tools to punish trade partners and to interfere with their economic policies if the administration here believes that we are being treated unfairly, which a lot of people do. So that was a big win for Mr. Mnuchin. And again, despite the pressure that he faced, Washington really showed that we are the significant player in the world. And this newly adopted pledge by the G20 to promote fairness as it pursues economic growth is a big win for us. So G20 officials warned Secretary Mnuchin that starting any type of trade war, and that would happen if we got too aggressive, would be a mistake. Well, Secretary Mnuchin said that obviously we want to avoid trade wars. We want successful trade, but we also want to make sure things are on balance, that again, the United States of America is being treated just as fair as we are treating other people. So it was interesting because the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who actually chairs the G20 this year, she's the chairperson, really signaled her frustration with global tensions over trade on Sunday. That was just a couple days after meeting with President Trump. And I don't know if you saw any of that, but those two standing beside each other, the best thing you could have done is turn down the volume on your TV and just watch them. And I just say that because that's what I did. And it was obvious that she was unhappy and he wasn't thrilled to be there either and wasn't going to give in. And Mr. Trump said right after that meeting with Merkel that he supported free and fair trade. So she tried to get back at him because, again, a couple days later, she came out and said, in times when we have to fight with people about free trade, open borders, and democratic values, it's a good sign that Germany and Japan don't fight. So she said that after she had met with the Japanese Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe. And obviously, she was talking about President Trump, trying to direct those comments about she doesn't want to fight with people about free trade, open borders, and democratic values. And I don't think anybody paid attention to that, at least not that I could pick up on. But again, President Trump said Friday before he met with Merkel that the United States has been treated very, very unfairly by many countries over the years, and that's going to stop. So again, I love seeing the obvious frustration by Merkel. You know, she's really lost her mojo. She used to make much better policy decisions, but the last 5 years or so, she has really run amok in her views and, of course, her actions. So her thinking that she could make some slighted comments after meeting with the Japan Prime Minister, you know, again, thinking that they would mean anything was totally inaccurate. Here's something that's really interesting that happened this week. I don't know if you heard about it, but Sears had an extremely rough week. So that's a shame for Sears, for the employees at Sears, for the investors that own the stock. But something else to consider that I was kind of looking at above and beyond Sears as a company is the landlords of all of these malls and shopping centers that are trying to figure out what they're going to do if, in fact, Sears files for bankruptcy. And that seems to be a very, you know, real thing. So you saw not just Sears being hit this week as far as their stock goes, but also shares of retail, retail real estate investment trust, but in general, just REITs, REITs in general, real estate investment trust, had a tough time on Wednesday after Sears said in a filing that it was concerned that their operating results indicate substantial doubt that they're going to be able to continue to function and exist. So you had these various real estate investment trusts like Pennsylvania Real Estate Investment Trust, CBO and Associate Properties, GGP. They were all down Wednesday morning in trading because, again, people were trying to figure out how this is going to affect them. You've got real estate executives saying that Sears had generally held on to its stores longer than expected and that lower-tier malls are likely to take a bigger hit if, in fact, Sears goes into to bankruptcy and liquidates all of its stores. So, you know, one CEO of a big investment and development firm that's involved in real estate was talking about, the guy's name is Bill O'Connor, was talking about that this is really a big deal and it has spooked a lot of people. So that's something that we're going to watch for, not just what happens with Sears, but also its impact on the malls and those that own and invest in those malls, whether they're, you know, large or medium-sized mall, and Sears is just one of the anchors. Interesting to hear Jeffrey Gundlach, who is nowadays known as the Bond King. But he's saying that if things don't improve, this is just his opinion, as far as the administration getting things done and actually seen material results, that it's going to impact what he calls the Trump trades, which include higher U.S. equities and bond yields. So this guy, Gundlach, he is the CEO at Double Line Capital. He oversees over $100 billion in assets. And basically, you know, he's saying that as far as he's concerned, if there's a sell-off in the U.S. equity market of any kind, he would see that money going in or diversifying into emerging markets. So in other words, if there's a rally and there's a reason to take profit, his deal is he thinks it should be going into emerging markets. So that was kind of interesting. I only bring it up because, again, he gets a lot of press these days. He can move not markets so much as he can investors to do certain things. He's kind of taken over Bill Gross's old position. Bill Gross used to be known as, when he was the head of the PIMCO Total Return Fund, the bond king. He's kind of lost that, and now it's this Jeffrey Gundlach guy. I just thought it was an interesting couple comments. One, that he doesn't seem to be really sold that the administration is going to get a lot of things done, and also if that happens and there's a sell-off, that, you know, there could be a problem. So if you think that's going to happen, he's saying any opportunity to sell into a rally, you would re-diversify into emerging markets. So, I mean, there is concern about the level of the market. Is it legitimate? Is it expensive? Is it undervalued? Does it have a lot of room to run? And I think it's, you know, if you listen to cable TV or the internet, or, you know, read the wrong piece on in some of the papers, I think you get a polluted view of it. What really is going on is people are feeling good, and whenever you have that level of confidence, you have to be careful that you don't get too euphoric, and that you're making good, sound decisions. And it's easy emotionally to get like that. I mean, look, household net worth climbed to a record $92.8 trillion in the fourth quarter of 2016. So you had that end-of-year surge in stocks. We've seen a steady climb in home prices, and that added more than $2 trillion of wealth to household balance sheets. So when people look at their statement, or when they see what their neighbor's selling their house for, they're feeling pretty good. And I'll have to say the biggest contributor to the increase was the stock market. So that's information that I saw from the Federal Reserve. So I guess with various people talking, and again, what we know, the media, especially the 24/7 cable media, can do to you. And we'll get to this in a little bit. But, you know, make sure that your risk level is appropriate, and that you are where you need to be, and don't get, you know, too wigged out if and when something does happen with the markets. And it includes his comments where he's kind of hinting that, you know, he doesn't think that this may continue, and he's looking for alternatives. So just make your own decisions and have your own planning in place, and I think you're going to be much better off. There's a guy named Jay Clayton, and he's President Trump's choice to lead the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. And it was interesting, during his nomination hearing this week, he called for scaling back regulations to encourage more public companies. So he wants more companies coming to market with their IPO, their initial public offering, because he knows that's a good way for good companies to create wealth for the company so that they can invest it and continue to scale out their business plan. So again, if a company goes public and people buy the stock, then that company has that money to put to work. And he thinks that that's really important, and he wants to get more companies that are public as opposed to being private. And, you know, he's questioning the rules and regulation, and he wonders about these big corporate penalties that are out there. And this is a guy, Mr. Clayton, I mean, he's got a background as a top Wall Street attorney. So it's no surprise that there are many Republicans who think he's really good and would do a good job there. And then you have Elizabeth Warren and other Democrats who you couldn't pay him to say anything positive about this guy. So I thought that that was positive. But again, we'll have to wait and see, number one, the type of job that he does, if he really gets rolling. And he had to sign an ethics agreement with the SEC because he was a lawyer on Wall Street, that he couldn't vote for 1 year on matters that directly affect his former clients. So if he did work for whoever, you know, he wouldn't be able to have any say to either be hard or easy on that company. He'd have to wait, and he's going to recuse himself. But, he really thinks that the U.S. stock markets have become a less attractive place for companies to raise money, and he doesn't like that. And he wants more of these companies to come to market with their initial public offering. And he actually talked about there's 3,000 companies have fallen off as far as publicly traded companies since 1997. And his view is we have to take reduce the burdens of being a public company so it's more attractive as opposed to going private. And then as far as economic news, just a couple things. Existing home sales dropped 3.7% in February from where they were in January. That was a little unfortunate. However, if you look at where we were February 16 to February 2017, they were actually up almost 5.5%. And I guess it's not a big surprise because it was tight inventory for existing home sales when I was looking at the data. So not only did you have fewer choices, but prices are going up. So home prices are increasing. And it's frustrating a lot of people that are looking to buy an existing home. Now, new home sales were up 6.1% in February, much stronger than what economists were looking for. So you have to wonder if, you know, these people aren't out there trying to maybe beat the rising interest rates that we're going to see as the year goes on, if in fact the Federal Reserve does what it says. So we'll keep an eye on that and see if in fact that situation continues with tight inventory. I mean, I would think that it will because there's an appetite out there, even though prices are increasing and folks do want to beat the rising rates. So, quick break, back in a minute with some Fed news.
Oh, hey. Feeling so faithless, lost under the surface.
Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD. And, of course, streaming live worldwide at WFMD.com. If you miss any of the programming, you can go to the audio vault at WFMD.com. Also, the Your Financial Editor program is available via download from iTunes, so you can get it there as well. You've heard me for years and years now talking about the Federal Reserve and the quantitative easing, the QE programs that they had after the financial crisis, where they spent so much of your money. And now And when I say so much, I mean like $4.5 trillion dollars. So now what they have to figure out is how to get that money back into the market, because they've got this huge balance sheet with $4.5 trillion dollars on it. Well, we did hear this week from the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank president, John Williams. He actually told the Wall Street Journal, I believe it was Thursday, that he would want to let the Fed's $4.5 trillion balance sheet begin shrinking by late this year. Now, Fed Chair Janet Yellen herself has not suggested any rush. You almost wonder if she wants to just leave it for the next person. Yellen said that she and her colleagues had discussed an eventual reduction in the balance sheet, but that no decision had been made. I just want to remind you, this has never been done. You look at this as a petri dish with $4.5 trillion in it, and they have to get those securities, sell them back into the market. And I'll tell you, that is going to be the best show in town. You'll definitely want to get a ticket and some popcorn and front row seats to see how they're going to do this, because it's never been done before. So it's worrisome. You know, they spent so much money, that literally $4.5 trillion, just the Fed, in trying to prop up the financial markets. And of course, they kept interest rates low, for historically low, for a very, very long time. So I just want to remind you that sooner or later, they're going to start unloading those securities. And I don't know how it's going to work out. So just keep that in the back of your mind, so that when you hear things again, you don't have any type of knee-jerk reaction, but that you've planned it out and you feel good about the way you're positioned. Tax Strategies for Retirement, that's our latest free white paper for you. It's a free download. Go to murrayfinancialgroup.com, and it's a fairly easy read. I think it's about 11 pages, and it's got a bunch of good information in there as far as tax strategies for your retirement. And if you go to murrayfinancialgroup.com, it's a free download, and you print it off. Also, while you're there, if you didn't look at it last week, or if you missed the program last week, there was a really good article that I posted for you, and it was by J.P. Morgan, and it's titled "Investors Can't Rely on Stock Market for Retirement Planning." So, and this is actually written by the person that does the Guide to Retirement for J.P. Morgan. So she's extremely smart. I would suggest that you take advantage of that article. And obviously, if you want to learn more about how J.P. Morgan tracks and gauges and forecasts retirement issues, you could do that as well. Okay, quick break here, get you some WFMD and Fox News, and then we're back to talk about risk, actually, what it means to you. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD, and of course, streaming live worldwide at WFMD.com. Good Saturday morning to you. Hope things are going well so far. And we were talking right before the news break there that a couple issues we're going to dive into this morning. One is risk. And obviously, it can be defined in a very broad way, but what really matters is your risk. And I would just suggest that you look at it that way this morning as we're talking about risk and exposure and losses and things that potentially could happen to you as you get closer to retirement. And then, of course, in retirement, I think risk is very individual. It's very personal. So I've been an advisor in the retirement area for 27 years. And it is nothing, and I'm sure you would agree with this, for a husband and wife to have very different appetites for risk or tolerance for risk. So you may have a husband who said, look, we've got $1 million invested, and I'm okay with taking up to a 20% loss before feeling the need for changes. And then you may have the wife say, well, I'm not feeling that at all. I don't want to take or experience any losses. So obviously, there's a big gap there. And what you generally try to do is have a thorough discussion and figure out what's agreeable. So let's say that they split the difference and they agree to a 10% loss as far as a combined risk tolerance. So then what you would want to do is structure a portfolio based on math and science that can be gauged to show a potential loss. So not only probability of an upcoming loss, say over the next 6 months, what's the probability of a loss of X percent, and also the gain of X percent. And then see if that's, again, within your comfort level and it's mutually agreeable that that particular strategy would suit you fine. So you take a look at what the portfolio is, whether you have an existing portfolio or something that you're trying to build, and input all this information and stress test it. So you could look at the probability of gain and loss, but also what you want to do is to be able to test it, to back test it against events that it actually happened using your specific holdings, whether it's stocks or mutual funds or a bond or an ETF or whatever it may be. But that particular asset, as it sits right now in your portfolio, and test it. And say, okay, if you had this exact portfolio during the financial crisis, when the market dropped from peak to trough over 50%, this is what would happen to your portfolio. And you could see, oh, okay, we'd have been down the same amount. We would have been down more. We would have been down less than the S&P 500 as a comparison. So you could actually see not only what the percentage would be, but what the dollar amount would be. So in other words, if you had $1 million and the financial crisis, and it was in the S&P 500, and the financial crisis hit, you would see, okay, minus 53% or over $500,000 would be the loss there. Are you good with that? Is that fine as far as your risk tolerance? Or would you say, no, we would want something more diversified, safer, so that maybe when you stress test it, it's down, even though that was a very, very turbulent and scary time, that instead of being down 50-some percent, that it would have been down 21% or 14% or whatever the number may be. So again, I would strongly encourage that you understand what your risk exposure is, because probably an event-driven situation will come about, and with the market being where it is, it would be an excuse for people to sell and take profit, and it could gain some steam, as we've seen in the past. So you have to make sure that you're comfortable with what you have, where it is, and know what your risk exposure is based on historical events, so that you don't make poor decisions when all that craziness is going on. Raising rates, for example. So the Fed already said they penciled in two more rate increases this year alone. How's that going to impact your portfolio? You know, what's the duration of your bonds, and how are they going to absorb interest rate increases? And by the way, one Federal Reserve official said this week that he wouldn't be surprised if they had to do three or four increases as opposed to two. So, you know, it could be a real game changer, but you can actually see what that increase would do to your particular portfolio. So you would know if you're comfortable with how it's structured, or if you need to basically make some changes. So it's not that hard. You know, there are various questions that should be asked, and that leads to creating a strategy that's close to being right up your alley, so you feel like you're in more control. And that's important, because like I said, when things do go bad, you need to have that that confidence. At least that's my suggestion. So, I would encourage you to make sure that you understand what you have and that it's a proper risk tolerance for you. I don't care about, you know, the neighbor, the brother-in-law, the friend down the street or whatever, but, you know, you really need to make sure that what you have is good for you. And it's all about knowing your risk tolerance, and that's what's going to give you the confidence. So now we'll talk about some retirement income in just a minute.
I've been gone too long, singing my songs on a roll.
Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD, and of course streaming live worldwide at WFMD.com. And mentioned right before the break, we were going to jump into some retirement planning issues, retirement income. You know, it all comes down to a comfortable retirement, I think. Along with that is you're confident in your retirement income that you're going to have. You may want to reduce exposure to some of your monies. This is getting back to the risk tolerance thing we talked about a few moments ago. Maybe, you know, once you're retired or closer to retirement, you're not liking the market volatility as much. Obviously, you want to look at reducing tax liability in any way that you can. You want to remain independent. What I mean by that is you want to retire and stay retired. You don't want to retire and then have to say, I've got to work four part-time jobs, all of which I hate, by the way. It's different if you want to work doing something that you enjoy, which most people do when they retire. They find they actually don't even call it work. They call it a hobby often, but it's they're making a big contribution to whatever it is that that they're doing. And then you start thinking about legacy, you know. What impact, other than just being a great mother or father, grandmother, grandfather, great-grandmother, great-grandfather, you know, are you going to leave? What type of legacy, you know, once you're gone and you're not here to be great? So you have to look at all of those things. You have to think about Social Security, retirement income strategies. Make sure that you're focusing on the right things. You know, don't get distracted and chase that shiny object thinking that, you know, by putting all of your money in whatever, you fill in the blank, that it's going to cure all your problems, because that generally is not the case. When you look at it's almost like a puzzle. all these different pieces, the IRAs, real estate, savings, pensions, Social Security, as I mentioned, 401ks, 403bs, the thrift savings plans. So if you think of all of those pieces on the table, you know, what you want to do is put them together. Make sure that they all fit properly, like a puzzle piece would, so that your retirement is being handled properly. Social Security, for example, it's one of those things that it's easy. Go to ssa.gov, check out your benefits if you haven't filed already. See what the projections are. You'll have to create an account, but I would encourage you to do that. And then just remember that when you talk about Social Security, you're talking about obviously retired worker benefits. You're also going to look at spousal benefits. So if something happens, you know, you're going to lose one of those Social Security checks. So you get to keep the larger one, but you know, you have to wonder about these survivor benefits and spousal benefits. You know, how do they all those things come into play? Make sure that you've met all of your eligibility, that you've got your 40 quarters of work in. You know, those types of things. Again, go to ssa.gov. Check it out. When you're planning, try to figure out the best, most opportune time to turn on those benefits. There's actually technology that if you seek it out, you know, you can have a report done on how to maximize your Social Security. And then again, you start looking at, okay, are you still in the accumulation phase for accumulating wealth, you know, for retirement? Are you in the preservation stage where, you know, say you just want to make sure that it's protected and you don't want any big losses? Are you in the distribution where you need income strategies so that you have that steady and reliable income throughout your retirement years? And I mentioned it, but legacy, passing on as much of what you have accumulated and preserved to your beneficiaries after you're done living that enjoyable retirement. So when you look at your retirement plan, what's the income plan? What's the investment plan or the investment strategy? How about taxes? How are they being addressed? What about health issues? You know, whether it's long-term care or some other type of health issue that you need to plan for. And then again, the estate planning. So we talk about legacy. Well, if you haven't done, you know, your estate planning also on the legal side, I would encourage you to do that. Meet with a qualified attorney that can do your wills and trust and powers of attorney and handle your medical directives and things of that nature that really could come into play and be extremely important. And by you taking some time and effort and doing it now, number one, it's going to be done exactly like you want it to be done. And number two, you're potentially taking that burden off of someone else if they have to make some decisions for you down the road or handle some business for you. You're going to make it a whole lot easier. So that's just another suggestion. I think I've never seen it not work. You know, people are always happy when they've completed their estate planning. And then again, back to kind of the risk thing that we talked about earlier, the stock market is going to have risk associated with it. So that's why you have to know what your level is. You know, how much can you take? Just think if you retired in 2008, 2009, just you say 2008, when the financial crisis was in full swing. So the S&P 500, just for that year, 2008, was down 37%. So if you didn't have the proper allocation for your retirement and you lost 37%, that could be a real problem. Now, not so much if you're not taking any withdrawals. I mean, you're still going to have your account drop from $500,000, say, to $315,000 if we just use some some easy numbers. But what if you were starting to take a withdrawal and just say you're taking $25,000 out of that $500,000 account? Well, it's not $500,000. Your first year of retirement, you've lost 37%. You're down to that $315,000, but then you take $25,000 out. Well, now you're down to $290,000 all of a sudden. So can you see the impact that timing can have? And again, if you have this volatility where you think, okay, I've got enough money, I've got this balance right up here where I needed it. I think if I take out X percent per year, I'll be okay. And then the floor falls out. That could be a serious problem for people. That's where I was getting at earlier, that, you know, you don't only retire, but you stay retired, as opposed to having to go back and do things that you didn't want to do or didn't plan on doing because of the level of exposure and the risk that you were taking, not realizing it was going to be a bad year when you retired, or a couple of years after you retired, or whatever it is. Again, you want to have confidence in your retirement, in my opinion. You almost look at it like if you're driving on a dangerous road where it drops off on both sides, you would like to have guardrails there. It's the same thing for your retirement. You want to have a good retirement income plan. You want to have your estate planning done. You want to have a plan in place that takes advantage of all of the legal tax opportunities that you have. And it's not that hard. So I would suggest that if you're not sure, or if you don't have those things in place, that you get a second opinion and really create that plan going forward so that you are confident. So that's my suggestion. We're out of time. I'll talk to you on the Morning News Express with Bob Miller, Monday through Friday, 5:50, 6:50, 7:50 a.m. We'll be back here next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Free report, Murray Financial Group, tax strategies for retirement. And also, check out that article I posted last week from J.P. Morgan. It's titled, Investors Can't Rely on Stock Market for Retirement Planning. And that's what they do. So, take a look at that. I think you'll learn from that, too. Some good stuff for you, because that's why we're here, is to help you better your situation. And these are the types of things that'll do it for you. MurrayFinancialGroup.com, free download, tax strategies for retirement. And you could read the article, Investors Can't Rely on Stock Market for Retirement Planning. This is Chris Murray wishing you and your family financial success.